Welcome to ASCP's podcast, Inside the Lab, where we discuss anything and everything that concerns today's laboratory professionals and pathologists. My name is Allie Brown, and I'm the Chief Officer of Medical Quality at ASCP, and I'm a pathologist and one of your hosts.
Hey, everybody. This is Kelly Swales, and I'm also one of your hosts. I'm an ASCP certified clinical laboratory scientist, and I'm the executive editor of journals at ASCP. So today we're going to be talking about the RISE exam, and we have a few very exciting guests, and I'll let them introduce themselves.
Hi, I'm Jay Wagner. I'm the Director of Assessment, Measurement, Evaluation, Examinations, and Outcomes. I've been working with the RISE committee since about 2004.
That's like the longest job title ever, Jay.
How do you remember it? And Jay, before you were at ASCP, what did you do?
I'm a lab tech by background, and I was fortunate enough to work in a community hospital, and every couple of years, my job kept changing, so I was able to work in just about all areas, and then was able to go through mergers and end up being administrative director over several labs, and worked with a consolidated lab over that with several hospitals sending work to us. So a little bit, and very little consulting too.
And I'm John Genzen. I'm chair of the RISE committee in my day job. I'm a professor at the University of Utah, and I work as chief medical officer at a reference laboratory.
Awesome, guys. Well, thanks so much for joining us. I just have a little bit of housekeeping and an advertisement to get out of the way before we get going. CME and CMLE will be available for listening to this podcast in the ASCP store. The American Society for Clinical Pathology is accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education to provide continuing medical education for physicians. ASCP designates this enduring material for a maximum of one AMA, PRA, Category 1 credit. Physicians should only claim the credit commensurate with the extent of their participation in the activity. And also, we need folks to know, the ASCP Resident Question Bank is a comprehensive online study tool developed for residents. Build your own custom practice exams from a library of hundreds of case-based multiple-choice questions with images, educational feedback, and references for further study. Residents only can now save 50% off through March 17th with promo code POD50. That's promo code POD50. Visit ASCP.org/RQB to learn more. All right, guys, now that that's out of the way, I'll just kind of kick us off with like a real general, real softball question here. Those listeners that either checked out our anniversary website or attended the annual meeting may remember from our timeline that RISE, or the Resident In-Service Exam, began in 1983 and was designed as a study tool for board exams. Can you guys give us a brief overview of RISE and kind of let's talk about what its current purpose is?
When it started off, obviously that's before my time, but I know at that time the RISE was given anonymously. We didn't know which residents and their scores when we gave them the exam. It was strictly for self-assessment, and program directors used the ports just to help evaluate their program. It was a paper and pencil exam, and we used to give out Kodachromes. I did have a resident question me years ago about, Jay, you see my date of birth? What's a Kodachrome? It's come a long way since then. So that was what RISE was prior to 2003. In 2003, in response to the ACGME outcomes, we converted the lab, the RISE, to an assessment tool. And this was asked of us by the PRODs. So, and we wanted to specifically measure knowledge. So we've come a long way. It's completely an online tool now. And as any of the residents who have taken the exam know that we do not release the questions. When it was paper and pencil, we did release questions. Obviously, you had them there where you could study for them.
I remember seeing binders of Kodachromes when I was a resident. I first took the RISE exam it must have been 2005. So it was already online each of the years that I took it during my clinical pathology residency. But I remember people studying off the Kodachromes as well. It's definitely evolved over time. I mean, it's an online exam now. It's I think, geared toward convenience and making it easier for the residents to take and for the administrators to help administer and make sure that the exam runs smoothly when it's actually ongoing. But it's evolved over time. And I think in a good way too, it makes it a little bit more approachable and easier to take. We saw, we'll probably talk about this, but we saw that during the pandemic as well. Having it as an online exam made it a little bit more easy to tweak for different circumstances and educational settings during the pandemic.
Yeah, you definitely hear about, even also for the board exam, but looking at the images on Kodachromes and sitting in the back of the room and bringing binoculars and things like that.
It's aging me a little bit, but we did have a slide projector in a room, and I remember going through some of them. So they were good, great study tools.
Yeah, I used them too. Yeah, definitely. So we talked a little bit about how the exam developed over the years. So in current state, we don't circulate the questions, et cetera. Who is responsible for writing those questions? Like, how many questions do we have out there in the ether?
It's a good question. We have a RISE committee, which is composed of about 30 pathologists and PhD laboratory scientists where appropriate for those disciplines. We meet on site. It was virtually during the pandemic, but on site at least once every year. To go over questions, to draft new questions. We solicit questions from a lot of professional organizations that have subspecialty experience, and we know that we want their depth of expertise. We call those our cooperating societies. And correct me if I'm wrong, Jay, but it's about 7 or 8 cooperating societies that we work with as well for question writing. So we, as a group in each of our sections, and then collectively put together the exam every year. We vet it to make sure we're not duplicating questions or repeating content unnecessarily. So, but that all gets formalized usually in the fall. And then by early winter, we've got the finalized exam that's ready to be administered.
That's actually a tremendous amount of work. I mean, if you think about it, such a large test. Yeah,
it's a tremendous volunteer effort by these committee members. I think I've said this to Jay before. It is the most productive committee that I've ever been involved with in my career. It's the most dedicated group of individuals who are there exclusively to help with training and to give residents and program directors additional information about progress during residency. It's a really unique experience. I think I've been involved since 2010, I think, something in that time range. It's just remarkable year after year how productive and focused the group is. It's also a really fun group. I don't know if people appreciate that. It's just a really pleasurable experience coming together as a group every year to put the exam together.
So are you guys using the same questions every year, or do you write like a whole new exam from scratch every year?
We have a question bank, but we do not repeat questions year to year. We are very deliberate about making sure that the content is fresh and making sure that it remains relevant to practice. So we've been around for a long time, as you mentioned in the introduction, and we've retired a lot of questions if we feel like they're either out of date or could be expressed in new ways that are more engaging and a little bit more relevant to today's clinical practice.
Okay, so based on that, because I don't want to name check or disparage anything, but I know like on certain certification exams, there's some questions that are asked. It's like, come on, man, we haven't done XYZ in the lab for 20 years. But then whenever you think about it, other countries, like some lower to middle income countries, are still using that technology and still might need to know, like, say, if a mycobacterium is a slow grower or a rapid grower or a scotochromogen or just a chromogen or whatever. They might not have the molecular technologies or whatever for the ID. So I'm kind of going off script here, I know, but how do you guys determine if something's really not in practice anymore? Because just because it's not in practice in, say, Europe, it might still be in practice in West Africa.
That's a great question, too. I'd love your opinion on this, Jay, as well. But I would just say initially, we try to focus on the fundamentals and the core issue that the resident we're hoping is learning and integrating into their own perspective. It's not necessarily designed to test the latest technology or way of measuring that fundamental aspect of pathology. But sometimes we do push that boundary a little bit to just make sure we're staying current. We have a lot of international participants in the RISE exam as well. And I think we're particularly sensitive to making sure that the exam is relevant in those settings and helping there just as much as it's helping here. I do a lot of the lab administration questions, and I think about that issue when we're talking about like CMS and FDA, and then you kind of catch yourself and say, this is US centric. It's important for those US residents, but we need to make sure that we address international issues as well. What do you think, Jay?
That's you writing those lab management questions, Sean.
I shouldn't have said that out loud.
Yeah, prepare for the influx of hate mail.
Well, one thing we try to do is we try to make the exam practical and not really going for the esoteric questions. We're not trying to trick anybody with questions. There's nothing like that in there. But I thought it might be interesting for me just to note that who takes the RISE from a country perspective, because I'm not so sure everyone knows that. And this could vary from year to year, but last year we had residents take it from Botswana, Canada, Kenya, Lebanon, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Singapore, Switzerland, and obviously here. And all the United
States. So truly all over the world, yeah.
All the United States programs do participate in RISE, many of them in Canada. But as you can see, there's a growing interest internationally too.
And each question should touch upon a fundamental learning concept. And we, at the end of the exam, we do share some content outlines for what was included in the exam so people can study more if they feel like they missed that content area. So we try to be pretty transparent and helpful so that people can hone in on additional learning objectives.
So how much overlap is there between RISE and, say, the AP path boards?
They are completely separate examinations.
Okay.
ASCP has no involvement in the American Board of Pathology examination. It's deliberately separate to protect the integrity of the board exam from any other, you know, preparatory exams or professional societies. I think we're very diligent and cautious of making sure there's any potential overlap. That being said, the core concepts may be reflected in questions on both exams. And if everything is designed right, both the RISE and the ABP exam, there should be some content similarity in terms of the types of information that's being asked, because that's what we should be knowing as pathologists, you know, going forward and what we use in practice. So they shouldn't be completely intellectually unrelated, if that makes sense, but they're definitely separate.
Yeah, I know when I was a resident, or when you and I were residents, I think we're fairly similar.
Cohort.
There was the study that came out with that magic number, right, to pass your boards, that magic number you had to get on the RISE exam. Mm-hmm. And I think to this day, that number kind of floats around there. What do you think about that? And what is the applicability of that for our residents?
It's the most common question we get is, do RISE exam scores correlate with American Board of Pathology pass rates? And that's obviously a very good question, and one that's at the forefront of everybody's mind, certainly when they're taking the exam. As you mentioned, there was a study done a number of years ago that did show that RISE exam scores do correlate with pass rates. Those are difficult studies to do, though. We often get asked, should we repeat it? Should we tweak it in different settings or for different specialty exams? And I'll phrase it this way, and there may be different ways of phrasing this. Our pathology programs do a great job in educating residents, and board pass rates are high in general because of the success of those training programs and the quality of the residents. So correlating scores to pass rates at times can be a little bit tricky. You need huge numbers of residents to look at to do that type of study. But that was done a number of years ago, and they do correlate. But we try to not overstate the significance of that and rather just focus on the individual residents' educational experience and the feedback they get from RISE to help gear them toward maybe what other areas they may be studying more on to sort of think about how they prepare for boards.
Yeah, because you don't want to oversell it, right? You don't want to be like, oh, if you get a score of X, then you're totally going to pass the boards, no problem. I don't know.
that's not our place. And we've never taken that position. But obviously, people are curious. And we've tried to give as much information as we can to be helpful.
You want that reassurance. You want that reassurance that it's like, all right, I did X on the RISE. I'm probably okay on the board. I have not just wasted $200,000 on my medical education. I'm going to pass this exam. You know, you want that reassurance.
Yeah. And I totally understand residents having those questions, and program directors as well, because they're trying to sort of guide their residents through the, you know, experience of residency, which can be challenging at times. I think one other thing is that different residency programs have different structure and organization of their training. So, you know, a first year resident at one program may have a lot of experience in chemistry, but maybe in another program, it's very AP oriented. So we try and make sure that our scoring and what we give back is general enough that you can sort of factor in some of those differences in training programs as well.
Speaking of scoring, can you go through a little bit on how the RISE exam is scored in a nutshell and in 1 minute or less? It's not complicated at all, is it? Jay is dying over there. Yeah.
Well, everyone takes the RISE in a 2 week period. And one of the reasons why we do that 2 week period, because the score to be meaningful, it's the comparative to everyone else at that point in time. So we try to get everyone to take it within a narrow time frame. So that's why we only offer it for a 2 week period. And we try not to overlap any other society's meetings when we offer it. And we try to have it early enough so we get the reports out in time. So you'll have them if you want them before you finish that year of residency or before you take boards. And if we give it too early, then we sometimes hear, oh, you're not capturing all the knowledge I'm gaining in that year of training. So it's a balancing act that we try to do. Now to the scoring. Once the RISE is done, we look at all the responses statistically, and we're trying to see, are the better performers getting the right answer? Are the better performers picking not two potentially correct answers? That could be a red flag. Is everyone picking the wrong answer? Well, so we look at statistically, and if anything is being flagged, we take those questions and we ask our experts on our committee, hey, can you look at this question? Is it keyed right? If it's not keyed properly, we fix the key and we'll score it. But if there are some anomalies that we just can't fix at this point, we will not score that question. So that happens right after that two-week period. Then after that, we do some more statistical analysis to score. It's called Rosh scoring. And what it does, it takes the measurement and it converts it to a scaled score. And what that really means is we're giving you a number. It's not like, oh, I got 83%. You're getting like 300 and something, 400, 500 something on each section. Those scores are comparable from year to year. And that's the reason why we score it this way. That scoring takes into account some slight variations and difficulty in the exam, maybe from year to year. So you can compare the scores. So now you get your report as a resident. It's a two-page report. The first page, you get your score. And it scores, there's about 12 scores in there for all the subsections and one overall. And you can look at that score and you can see how well you did compared to PGY 1s, 2s, 3s, and 4s. We list all that on that first page on the report, along with the overall. And overall means all the PGY 1 through 4 residents. So you can see what that three-digit number looks like. In addition, we look at that number and we tell you your percentile ranking. So if you got a score, say 450 in that area, say it's cytology, and then you look in the next column, goes, oh, I'm in the 60th percentile. What does that mean? It means that you scored as well as or better than 60% of the participants in your same PGY. I just mentioned that because sometimes some people tend to confuse percent scores and percentiles. So this is that percentile ranking. So that's what's on page one. On page two is a list of all the items you missed. If you look at the list of items you missed, we also attach to report all the item descriptors and references for each question. An item descriptor is just a short phrase of what the question's take-home point was. It's very general. But that combined with the reference, which often we include a page number, you can get a kind of good idea of what the question was about. And I know I may sound like I'm going into a little bit too much detail on this, but recently I've had questions from some residents that didn't understand that you could use it that way. So I thought it'd be worthwhile just to share that for some of those residents who may not be aware that you could use it that way.
Absolutely, because an ideal assessment also has some education behind it, right? Hopefully you can learn from the questions that you missed. So I don't know that people keep flipping the pages to that page where you can see that. So it's great to point out that that's there. It can be used as a study tool for your next year's RISE exam, for your board exam, for your practice, et cetera.
Okay, so I've got a question. You said that it was given just for 2 weeks at a time, once a year for 2 weeks. I guess I have two questions rolled into one question. First, what time of year is the test given generally? And then two, It sounds like a resident can potentially take this exam every year of their residency. It's not just for fourth years, right? Like you can take it all 4 years of residency.
Yes. It's usually given around the beginning of March. This year it's going to be March 11th through the 24th.
Yeah.
And it's the same exam, whether you're a first, second, third, or fourth year resident, all the residents take the same exam, but it gives that comparison to whatever your PGY program year of training.
Right.
And we do take the exam every year of residency, but it's obviously a new refreshed exam.
As we ascertained before, it's not the same test every year. that would make it less useful. So like I kind of mentioned before, back in the 80s, or I think Jay, maybe you mentioned back in the 80s, it was purely a self-assessment. And it was, you know, we mailed out Kodachromes and pen and paper exams. Back in the 90s, when I took my CLS exam, I had to go to a testing center to take the exam. How is the test administered today?
The test has a lot of flexibility in the administration. We do recommend proctoring it. And because it's online, that gives us a lot of flexibility to, given COVID in the last several years, resident safety was very important. So being an online exam, it's ultimately up to the program director how they administer the exam for their program.
And having protected time by programs to take the exam is really important in a lot of settings so that residents can just focus on the exam. What we don't want is a resident to be taking the exam and then they're also on service and they're paged for some urgent clinical question. Obviously, the urgent clinical question would take priority. So if there's not a sort of protected time and making sure that they've got cross coverage during the exam, it can get a little complicated. So we try to give the program directors that flexibility by having an online exam so that they can design what's the best way to administer it in their setting.
And the exam is divided up into sections. There's three sections of the RISE. The total exam is 6 hours.
So
but it's not 6 hours straight. And it's about 350, 370 questions, somewhere in that range. So there's sections, and the shortest section is a 1 hour section. The other ones are like 2 hours and 15 minutes, 2 hours and 45 minutes. Once a resident starts a section, the clock is ticking. And so if you take a break, you're losing time taking that section of the exam. But you can't take breaks between sections, and depending how the program's administered, they could even administer different sections on different days. Again, it gives programs that flexibility to administer how they feel would best suit their program's needs. I know a lot of programs, they're asking me pretty soon, like, when is the RISE going to be for the following year? Because they'll go ahead and they have to get their spot reserved. Many programs have testing centers.
Right.
So they reserve their testing center for the residents to take it. Going back to John's point about, hey, have that uninterrupted time. So I think that would facilitate that also.
That length of the exam also, it just makes me think of the amount of information that residents are expected to learn. And this is just a small piece of it, but I think it's a really helpful check over the course of the year on how a resident's doing and where else they need to focus. That I think that's the actual significant value of this, is just giving that information. Yes, it's a lot of time on that day or however it's structured when they take it, but I think it's well worth it.
I think you bring up a really important part there, the purpose of it, right? This assessment and looking at how your performance is, where are your strengths, where are your weaknesses? Because every year there, I remember when I was a resident, there were rumblings like, you know, such and such program, they get to take it at home.
And we use the term exam. Yes, it is an exam. You don't fail the RISE exam. You use the RISE exam as a way to shape your learning going forward. And I think that's a unique feature of it as well, that it's that safe space to really gauge progress and test yourself on how you're doing.
Yeah, it's a tool to discuss medical knowledge. And we put this statement in the registration materials that it's not intended to be the sole criterion on which resident performance, promotion, or advancement is based. And that's a direct response to questions that we were getting from residents. So we wanted to put it out there to programs.
It really is such a large number of residents taking it. It's every resident in the country. Yep. That even if there were a couple of programs where proctoring maybe going in a different direction, if you have a resident, you know, I'm a former program director. If I have a resident that's consistently performing poorly on the RISE exam, it's really something is going on. You know, it is a red flag. You know, if everyone kind of does bad in this one section from time to time, that, you know, it's kind of all over the place. But really, as a program director and as a resident looking at your own scores, the fact that it is longitudinal and it is comparative, it really does help tell whether they are true signals or if they're noise, right? When you're looking at the data. So we've talked a lot about the resident in-service exam, but I know that we have multiple in-service exams, and I think we would be remiss. I know the podcast is about the resident in-service exam, but we have several flavors of the in-service exam, starting with what's the first thing that residents could take before they, even before they take the in-service exam?
It's called RISE First. And RISE First is given in later part of June, beginning of July, when a resident is just starting. And this is an exam that ASCP just didn't dream up. Again, it was in response to feedback that we received from program directors that thought it might be beneficial to get a baseline of where their incoming residents may be. What kind of knowledge concerning pathology do they have when they start our program?
So what about the other options for in-service exams? So I know that we have some fellowship in-service exams as well.
We do have some fellowship exams. We have five fellowship exams. We have the heme path, forensic, neuropath, pediatric path, and transfusion medicine. And how these exams came about was usually from a RISE committee member, and maybe at the PRADS meeting where they would come and ask, have you ever thought about doing exam about, I'll just pick, pediatric pathology. And I go, well, that's not good, but who could we get to help write questions and get to that depth? Oh, I'm affiliated with the Society of Pediatric Pathology. So it's that feedback and collaboration that we really value and really helps to make these fellowship and service exams of the high caliber that we want them to be.
You want to mention, Jay, the difference in timing of the fellowship exams and how we address 1 year versus 2 year fellowships?
Sure. Most fellowships are 1 year fellowship. The only one that's a 2 year that we do is the neuropath. Neuropathology is a 2 year. We give an exam in the fall, maybe to serve more as a baseline when a fellow is just starting their year of training. And then we give a different exam the following spring, different questions. So then it could be used on the fellow would have been exposed to two different exams, two different sets of questions, and could get a gauge of how much they've learned over the year. And maybe the combination of both could help them in their studies.
Yeah, and we have many of the exam writers for the fellowship exams also contributing questions for the regular RISE exam, correct?
Yes, definitely.
So that kind of brings me to a question I have. Do we, and by we, I mean ASCP, have like study guides for the RISE? Kind of a follow-up to that is, can residents use the RISE exam as a study guide for their boards?
The RISE exam, like I talked to previously just a little bit about, the item descriptor, the brief take-home point, and the reference can give you a little idea what questions you missed. But a lot of the feedback that I had received early on here at ACP when we were no longer doing paper and pencil was, we want those RISE questions so we can study from. And out of this need, the resident question bank came about. The resident question bank actually was started by a former RISE committee member. These questions are written in the exact same manner that the RISE questions are written. They're not the same questions. The major differences with the resident question bank questions is you can see the question after you take it. You know if you got it wrong or got it right. And there's educational feedback. And that's an area that we have a separate committee that works on the resident question bank. This is separate from the RISE committee.
That was going to be my next question, yeah.
And it's about the same size as the RISE committee as far as members. And we try to emphasize on the feedback is explain why the right answer is right and why the incorrect answers are wrong. And just as a kind of an example, you know, we put out 600 to 700 questions a year for the resident question bank we publish. In any 4-year cycle, we do not repeat any questions. So if you have 4 years, you participate in resident question bank for 4 years, you have a lot of questions that you can look at and review. Some of these questions, when you're writing so many questions in each content area, I'll just pick medical renal. which I know is an area that is quite specialized. But we try to emphasize with our committee members the feedback. So even if you're a first-year resident, that you can get something out of that question. But if you're a fourth year and really thinking you might even specialize in medical renal, some of those questions potentially could be a little bit more difficult. And some of the explanation could go into more detail. So both ranges of residents taking or using these tools could get benefit.
One thing I would add to that too is we do share a general content outline of topics for the types of topics that would be covered on the RISE exam. So that is, it is knowable in general what type of topic areas we're going to ask about. We don't want that to be a complete surprise, but it's a very general outline so that we're not giving clues to the specific types of questions, for example.
One thing we built into the resident question bank was study tools. So depending how a resident would like to use it, give me the questions that most people are getting right. Give me the easier questions first. Or, oh, give me the harder ones. Mix it up. Hey, can I make a note on this? Oh, I'd like to see this question again. So there's ways to use these tools within the way we provide it that a resident can actually use it as a study tool.
One thing that keeps coming up, and it's something I think it's worth emphasizing, is how seriously you take feedback from program directors and residents alike. So I've seen this happen, you know, at program director meetings that we've been to together. And I know that you get emails and phone calls. I mean, Jay Wagner is a celebrity at the pathology program directors meeting, and unequivocally, because you do provide, I mean, I'll just brag on you, such great customer service. What are some great points of feedback that you've heard over the years that have led to improvements in the RISE or different ways of looking at things?
Well, some of the ones that we talked about were just these different exams that came back that, hey, could we work together and come up with these in-service exams for the fellowships? The reports. I would have to say all the reports came about due to feedback that we received from program directors. Any of the enhancements that we've had, the percentile ranking reports. I talked at some length about the reports that individual resident receives, but maybe residents don't know, but program directors receive everything that a resident receives plus more reports that give averages and comparative statistics for their program and how it compares to other programs. And a program director may use that as just an additional tool to look at and say, are all of our residents missing questions in this area? Is this something that maybe potentially we should look at? They could also use the comparative reports just as a tool to help counsel residents. When residents, sometimes a resident will come to me and say, hey, Jared, I don't believe the score. I know I nailed this area. And we'll look for anomalies just to see if potentially there was something. But ultimately, I always ask them to please touch base with their program director, because a program director has so much more knowledge. Again, this is one tool among many that program directors have. In addition, program directors have these other comparative reports that they can help a resident. We provide program directors even with the reports, how we do the percentile rankings. There's a separate table for PGY1s, how we do it, 2s, 3s, 4s, and overall. So they do have some reports that I think some residents may find help when we're talking with their program director.
I think we've gotten other general feedback too. I mean, we've tried to incorporate a lot of images into the exam to keep it fresh for the person taking the exam. If it's too text heavy, that can be a pretty difficult process to get through. So we've had feedback there. We've also added survey questions before and after the exam based on program director comments. We recently gathered a lot of information about digital pathology exposure and residency. That came from one of the PRODS meetings. Before that was residents' experience during COVID, which was really, really amazing information that we got back that we ended up sharing in Critical Values. That was all based on feedback from program directors.
Yeah, it's a great way to harness, since it's a 100% uptake, you know, the residents that they take this exam. However, I know there's a point of balancing a question over fatigue. You don't want to just give them this huge survey, you know, when you're testing to death, right?
Yeah, I've just taken a 6-hour exam. I don't want to answer 50 questions on this survey now.
I am extremely conscious of that, and we try very hard to keep it as focused as possible to get the essential information that we can provide back to them, but not add any extra burden on top of that. We're extremely sensitive to that.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Where is the RISE exam heading in the future? What do we have to look forward changes in the RISE? Are there things in the works, ideas, some recent feedback or anything like that?
Yeah, I think we're vetting through a lot of those ideas. The world of education is changing, and we need to make sure that the RISE exam stays modern and changes along with that in the appropriate way. We don't want to lose our fundamental, you know, reflection on RISE as a tool for resident education in progress. But that being said, the types of information that residents are using in education is changing. I mentioned digital pathology, a lot more focus on whole slide imaging. That's something that we're looking at as well. We need to make sure that whatever we integrate in terms of, you know, potential future changes and question types or formats, it also has to work and to be extremely stable at all locations. What we don't want to do is incorporate something that maybe is novel and inventive, but has a browser problem and 30% of the residents can't see the image. Like, that would be a complete problem. So we're definitely thinking through these issues. Is there anything, Jay, you would want to add to that? I know there's a lot going on.
No, just that the RISE has evolved over the years. I mean, years ago, there was a section on immunopathology. Some people may just now kind of smile about it, but it has evolved, and now there's more obvious molecular and genomic kind of questions. We've recently added path informatics. So the content areas have evolved over time.
I have one final question I want to ask, and this is mostly for Jay. So how much sleep do you get a night? Because I feel like, just based on this conversation, that you're a busy guy.
Yeah, I do like my sleep, though. It is busy. There are a lot of different aspects of it. So it made this this job for me, coming from a tech background and now working with large teaching institutions, which I really had no experience with. It's been so rewarding. And really the value, I mean, personally for me, is when I get to work with program directors, listen to resident feedback, and then work with the tools I have in ASCP to meet their needs. It makes it fun, to tell you the truth.
And I want to add to that, just an incredible appreciation and gratitude to Jay for all that he's done in helping move the RISE exam forward over so many years. I mean, he's impacted thousands and thousands of residents' training, which has directly impacted patient care, not just, as we mentioned early, not just in the country, but internationally. It's a really remarkable product and a really remarkable contribution.
Well, I certainly hope that Jay has a fountain of immortality at his house, because he can never retire or die. That's just, we can just all agree on that, right?
Well, you know, there's a lot of, not only our committee members, all those volunteers, there's lots of people that help put it together. And it's truly, when they are submitting their questions, doing it, I sleep so much better then. I so appreciate all the help. Obviously. Yeah.
Our ASCP volunteers.
You guys, this has been a really great conversation. I've personally found it really illuminating, because I didn't know a whole lot about the RISE. So I've really appreciated it. And I really hope that our listeners do too. And while I'm talking to our listeners, remind your colleagues about the podcast and subscribe on your favorite podcast aggregator.
And don't forget, you can receive CME and CMLE credit for listening to our podcast by looking for Inside the Lab in the ASCP store, which is on our website, www.ascp.org. There's also information about the RISE exam, I would imagine, on our website. Check it out.
I would imagine so. Thanks, everybody.